All right. It is Monday, January 31st. Josh, anything happened in baseball today?
Pretty slow day.
Yeah, not a lot of news. Yeah. JK, the stove was hot! We got a whole lot of trades to run down for you all today. Welcome to the podcast. Let's kick it off. Josh, last week we talked about the Tigers and their rebuild. We predicted that Alex Avila would not get moved. He ended up getting tied in with Justin Wilson and sent to the Cubs. Tell me your thoughts.
Yep, well, it's a pretty good trade, as we know. I just blanked. What's my man's name over at the Cubs?
Theo Epstein.
Thank you. All right. Count it in a sec. Yeah, you know, the Cubs out here just wheeling and dealing. Theo Epstein kind of making moves. They're in an interesting position because we all kind of knew that they would eventually turn it on full blast and be able to overtake the Brewers, and it seems like coming out of the All-Star break, they've been able to do that. So it makes sense for them to be aggressive buyers. And this looks like they went out and decided to, hey, you know what? We're going to shore up the bullpen, add in another arm. Talked up with the Tigers. Looks like they were able to make a package deal. And the Tigers, you know, they got a pretty decent return with Isaac Paredes and Jaime Candelario. So they're also going to end up with a player to be named later. So it could end up being a pretty good trade for the Tigers, who at this point really just need to get bodies into that farm system.
Yeah, and this kind of signifies the Cubs pushing all their chips in on this current roster, which is something they should definitely do. They have an unreal amount of talent on their 25-man roster at the moment. And today they traded away, in this trade, Jaime Candelario, their last top 100 prospect, according to Baseball America and MLB.com. So this is kind of the Cubs locked in for the next 3 to 5 years. On this roster. And it's not just Justin Wilson they've picked up this trade deadline. They also made the big move to acquire see, now I'm blanking on my man's name, the lefty.
Jose Quintana.
Yeah, Jose Quintana, which is really going to add some length to that rotation down the stretch, and putting Justin Wilson in the back of that bullpen, which with what is already a pretty good bullpen in the NL Central, they look like they're going to be a tough out going into the playoffs, and they're probably going to lock down that division pretty shortly here.
Yeah, they definitely bolstered their staff. They've definitely gone out and kind of fixed. I mean, the issues that they were having early on was, you know, they weren't hitting the ball, but the biggest issue was that that starting rotation was just not getting it done after, you know, being extremely successful last year. So it made sense for them to go out and get Quintana. It made sense for them to go out and get Wilson, just because you always want to shore up that bullpen before heading into the crapshoot that is the playoffs. And I think it was just smart of them to realize, like, look, they got a lot of young talent on the roster now that's going to be under control for the next 3 to 5 years. So those prospects are basically blocked. The best thing you can do with them is to kind of turn them into additional help to win now, since they're in a win now mode.
Yeah, and the Cubs weren't the only team to the only contender to bolster themselves this week. The team I think did the best job was the Yankees, who today made the big move for Sonny Gray. That's the guy everybody has been talking about all season long as being the guy who was going to get traded.
Yeah, and it was a fun one, you know, basically watching down to a couple hours before the deadline to see if it would actually get done. That stove was repeatedly on and off for a few hours there at the end, but I think it was
It seemed like everybody in the world was connected to Sonny Gray at some point.
And it makes sense. I mean, a 27-year-old proven starter with a couple more years under contract control, that's a pretty valuable asset. And I think the A's did a very good job to cash in on that and pull back some pretty good talent with the headline with Dustin Fowler and Jorge Mateo, but really the top chip being there, James Capriellen, But I think it's also
Caprellian,
a great job. Caprellian. Thank you. Excuse me. But I think it's also a great job by the Yankees to kind of realize that, like, hey, look, like, they have the resources to go out there and get what was the most valuable asset on the market and be able to shore themselves up in a very, very, very competitive division right now. We'll race with the Red Sox and then also the Rays and in the Orioles' minds, the Orioles.
And the Yankees didn't just add to their rotation with Sonny Gray. They also picked up Jaime Garcia, which I think is a low-key smart move.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be his third team this year he's actually been on.
Yeah, exactly. That's an interesting one. It was the Twins, I think, were riding high and said, hey, look, there's a little bit of light at that door crack. It looks pretty good. And I think three games in Los Angeles against the Dodgers closed that door real quick. It was not a good
the
outing.
Dodgers are so good.
They're just.
I think Jaime, he's not going to be on there. I doubt he's going to be in their playoff rotation, but he's going to be able to eat innings down the stretch, which is going to be huge for what has been a pretty weary Yankee rotation.
Yep.
Delicate arms in that cycle. And now adding Sonny Gray and Jaime Garcia to Tanaka, CC Sabathia, it's going to make them looking pretty tough in September.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's also a nice move going forward when you're able to pair where you have a triple where you have Sonny Gray paired up with Jordan Montgomery and Luis Severino for the next couple of years. So, I mean, if you're the Yankees, you're sitting on cloud nine after making that trade.
Yeah, and they also, we already know, about a week, maybe a little bit more ago, they picked up Todd Frazier to fill their hole at third base, DH first base, wherever they need him, and David Robertson to come out of the pen in addition to Dellin Betances and Aroldis Chapman. I don't know about you. I think the Yankees won the deadline. As much as it pains me to say as a Red Sox fan, the Yankees solved all their issues in one single deadline move, and they held on to their top prospect in Gleyber Torres.
I mean, they definitely – and you know what's interesting about that? I think having Gleyber Torres actually come down with an injury – probably helped them from a position of being able to hold on to him and hold on to that potential. I'm sure some teams were asking, but they definitely did a great job of plugging their holes, finding out basically where their issues were and being able to go out there and find appropriately priced pieces to be able to fill those holes. Instead of like maybe one we have mentioned already, the Cubs with Quintana, where they may have overpaid a little bit, but definitely found something that could help them. I think the Yankees won the trade deadline, but I have to say, I think the Dodgers are, they might be a pretty close second.
Oh, yeah, the Dodgers really improved. But I want to stay on the AL East for a quick bit here, because that's looking like a really competitive division. Before we move on to the other teams that made moves who are still competing for either a wild card spot or the top of that division, what do you expect to see from the Yankees moving forward with their pickups now filling a lot of holes?
I mean, it's fun to say about the Yankees, but I mean, the rich got richer. This is, I wouldn't say like a juggernaut, because obviously, you know, when you make kind of these many moves, it takes a while for everybody to kind of understand what their role is and get into position. But when you look at what they have out in the bullpen, what they have on the rotation that they throw out there every 5 days, I mean, you can see that, you know, even if their offense is, you know, just slightly above average to above average, the arms that they're able to throw out there, which is really the key when it comes to October, they're going to be fine going forward.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are going to be tough. You know, my Red Sox have been on top of the division for most of the year, but it looks like the Yankees are going to be tough to knock off from here on out, especially with the Red Sox offensive struggles moving forward. Speaking of the Red Sox, they made a big move today to pick up Addison Reed. I really like that trade. That they've been struggling in the last month and a half or so with that eighth inning role. And I know I just wrote an article for the blog saying that specific inning roles are stupid, but it's somewhere the Red Sox have been struggling. I think they really fixed it with Addison Reed.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's stupid, but it's not going away anytime soon, especially since that's how these guys get paid. Yeah, for as much as the Yankees did, I mean, I still really like what the Red Sox did to, you know, shore up themselves. I mean, they called up Devers. He's been pretty good to start. I know we're working on small sample size, but like, he at least looks like today. Exactly. Like, he looks like, he looks like he's ready for major league pitching, and he looks like he's ready to kind of help out that, like, you know, massive hole at third base for the Red Sox. But at the same time, I mean, adding in Addison Reed was a great move because, I mean, the Red Sox have just been the team this year. There's always that one team, but they've just been the team this year that's been unlucky when it comes to the injuries, especially in the bullpen. So to be able to, you know, fish around and not have to overpay for a quality arm like that to shore it up kind of helps, especially if you expect some of the reserves to come back off of the DL anytime soon.
Yeah, and that was yet another move by dealing Dave Dombrowski in the bullpen. He's so far he's acquired in his tenure as Red Sox president Carson Smith from the Mariners 2 years ago. He still hasn't pitched. Tyler Thornburg last year for best hitter on the planet, Travis Shaw. He hasn't pitched this year. And now he's acquired Addison Reed. You know, I'm never really big on constantly trading prospects for the same position, but he was kind of forced into a position where he had to keep getting better because the Red Sox are a competitive team.
Exactly. I mean, it's very similar to the situation that he was in when he was with Detroit, too. And that was a team that was very, very competitive. It had a good lineup. It had a great lineup at times. And it always just had holes in the bullpen. And I think he's realizing that trying to put all your eggs in one basket and acquiring one guy to go in, you know, shit happens. They have a shitty slump where they just aren't able to produce, or they have injuries that occur that just render them unavailable. The bullpen can be a fickle monster, and it's too hard to kind of predict what's going to happen. So sometimes you're just kind of forced into a situation where it's like, you know, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks.
So I got to ask, as a guy you've worked for in the past with Dombrowski, what's he like on trade deadline day?
It's very funny. Like, he's got himself a poker face because he was walking around and it did not look like he'd bothered him at all. He was sitting there smiling, you know, BSing, pretending like he knew everyone's name in the office who was below his level. Like, he was chilling. Like, even though he knew his job was on the line, he had his poker face on. And he was trying to sit there and wheel and deal. I mean, the big thing was them talking about how, like, he was basically when they were making the Suspettish trade, and that one had to be faxed in at the last minute, like minutes before the trade deadline at 4 o'clock. I mean, Dombrowski was apparently he was in no rush. He was just making sure all the details were correct, making sure all the I's were dotted. And he was not about to stress himself to try and get it in there because he knew he would get it in on time. Just cool as a cucumber.
That's always something that one of the little nuances of baseball front office, that it's 2017. The MLB requires you to fax in a card copy of every trade.
Yes. It's silly, right? Like,
it's ridiculous.
Like, baseball is, of course it would be baseball who is the one that would stick to tradition. You know what? We've been doing faxes for a while. We're going to stick with it.
Faxes work. We're going to keep using faxes. And the Red Sox made another move, and I know I'm biased, but I really, really loved the pickup of Eduardo Nunez.
Yep.
Just like with the Addison Reed trade, the Red Sox didn't give up any more than organizational pieces. They only got a rental, but in a guy in Nunez, they got a guy who can hit, he can run, he can play multiple positions. He's a natural shortstop who's played third base, second base, outfield, and first base this year.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is that's probably your best-case scenario is insurance for Devers. If you have to deal with him as your starting third baseman, hey, look, that's an upgrade from what you had. If Devers shows that he's actually pretty good and can stick at that position, now all of a sudden you have a wonderful piece off the bench that you can stick almost anywhere on the field and expect to have pretty good results. So I think they did a pretty good job of finding a piece that complemented their roster the best and being able to pay a respectable price for it.
Yeah. After the moves today and earlier this week, the AL East is going to be a really interesting race moving down the pipe because, you know, you got the Red Sox. Whether or not they get back on top is really now just a question of whether or not guys like Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts can get hot again. Because if they do, and you add in Nunez and Devers proves he can stay in that lineup, he looks like he can so far. That is a deep lineup that can compete with anybody in the league. They got pitching headlined by Chris Sale to compete with anybody in the league. And the Yankees and the Red Sox both right now look like absolute World Series contenders duking it out for first place finish. And I was surprised to see the Rays, who are only, two games out of first, three games out of first, being sellers somewhat at the deadline. They traded Tim Beckham. They were listening on a number of other players on their roster. Are the Rays thrown in the towel, or is this just the Rays continuing not to do things the way other people do?
It's pretty interesting because, especially in this year of, you know, almost extreme parity in the American League, like, you know, with them having a chance for a division title, like, their landing spot's probably a pretty comfortable place there in the wild card, even though, I mean, nobody wants to, you know, deal with the one-game playoff, but at least you're in the playoffs. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, you can't really call this a cost-saving move because Beckham, I mean, he still had some arb years left under him. So this is one where I feel like they know a little bit more than we do, and they're making some moves that internally make a lot of sense to them that may not be as clear to us on the outside.
Yeah, and before we move on, the Rays did make one pickup. They got Lucas Duda from the Mets. He looks like he's going to slot into that DH role. You know, you look at their lineup, it doesn't seem like it's a division-winning team, but they got a lot of really solid pieces. This is going to be a really fun race to watch down the stretch. I bet you we're going to be spending a lot of time on the podcast talking about the AL East and writing about the AL East on the blog.
Yeah, man, I can't wait to see Jeremy Hellickson just lead the Orioles to the top, right?
Why would the Orioles trade for Hellickson? It doesn't make sense.
For me, I think it is my most confusing trade of the deadline. Like, I understand, you know, hey, look, like, he's a cheap right-hander, but it's your rotation is already full of mid-level right-handers. I don't understand why adding to that is going to make it any better.
Well, you know how the Orioles run. Word comes down from the boss, Peter Angelos, and obviously word came down that he wanted more mediocre starting pitchers.
Well, we saw how Ubaldo Jimenez turned out for them last year. So, yeah, please feed me more of that. Give me more.
Moving on to some non-mediocre starting pitchers. The Dodgers picked up Yu Darvish.
That's a big trade for them because it felt like it wasn't going to happen because you had the Rangers who were – you know, basically looking at it and say, look, we're not going to win our division, but there is still a chance we could get to the playoffs, to the wild card. But they were also asking for a pretty large return on basically what is a rental. And you had the Dodgers, who were pretty adamant about not trading any of their top prospects. I mean, they had their top four that they basically wanted to hold on to. And even though they eventually parted with Willie Calhoun, I believe that's probably the one that they were most willing to part with. But, I mean, the Dodgers were able to get it done. They were able to shore up that spot. Now, if we know that Clayton Kershaw is coming back and you have Alex Wood and or Rich Hill throwing pretty well, like that's a pretty good playoff rotation. That's one that you feel pretty comfortable against up against almost anybody.
Yeah, the Dodgers are very clearly the best team in baseball. They got Kenley Jansen, who's having a monster year coming out of the pen. Their pitchers are throwing pretty deep. Darvish, the biggest thing for me on that trade is that doesn't look like the Dodgers are now going to be hurt by the fact that Kershaw is on the DL for 10 days.
Which is absurd to say, right? Like, a team lost the best pitcher in baseball over the past 5 to 7 years, and we're sitting here going, like, you know, that's actually – that's not going to hurt them that much. I mean, that's how, you know, prudent of a move that they made, because not only did they go out and get another top-of-the-line starting pitcher, I mean, they got a couple horses to come into that bullpen to help out as well. So even if the starting pitch falters a little bit, I mean, the Dodgers aren't hurting to go to their bullpen early. I mean, they picked up Tony Watson, and they picked up Tony Cingrani from the Pirates and the Reds, respectively. So it's looking like they got, you know, the lefties to come out and play one-on-one matchups. They got the righties to come out here and eat up the middle innings and bridge the gap, and they have the, you know, the monster, the cutter monster at the back of the bullpen in Kenley Jansen. So the Dodgers right now, they're looking pretty good.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones in that division who are looking pretty good. Some other guys made moves. The Rockies and the Diamondbacks both made moves before the deadline. Nothing as big as acquiring Yu Darvish, but the Rockies did go out and make a buy low for Jonathan Lucroy for a player to be named later.
Yeah, it was a pretty smart move by them, just because Lucroy is a proven hitter and a proven receiver. I mean, ever since the trade to the Rangers, he has been pretty far into a slump. So there is that bit of a concern there, but they were able to ride that concern to a much lower price for him than what the Rangers had to give up to get him last year. So I think they're going to, you know, basically hope for the classic quote unquote change of scenery effect to take place. And hopefully, you know, he's sit there and energized by being on a winning team, get a chance to go out there and help that pitching staff kind of navigate Coors Field. And hopefully he'll be able to benefit himself from the extremely strong offensive environment.
Yeah, how much do you buy into the whole change of scenery could change the performance thing? I mean, obviously when you're going to Coors Field, you expect a guy to get a little better as offensively, because it's such a hitter's ballpark. But in general, I'm saying, do you actually think that the change of there's much to the change of scenery dynamic?
I mean, in general, no. I think you can have specific instances where what that scenery is matters, and I think this could be one of them where, yeah, putting him in an offensive environment will help him hit a little bit better. It'll help some of those things fall for doubles that might have been caught earlier in the gaps. But I think for the most part, that's just our human nature to, you know, want to have explanations for anything. So clearly, when he got traded and decided to start batting 400 in the next, you know, 30 at-bats, clearly it was just the change of scenery that helped him, not the randomness of baseball and small sample sizes.
Right. And the Rockies did make another move that I really liked. They picked up Pat Nashek from the Phillies a few days ago.
Yep.
I think that's a great move. Now you got Nashek and Greg Holland coming out of the bullpen with what is an offensive juggernaut. So they'll be able to hang in any game, and they'll be able to shut it down late. There's not a ton of depth in that bullpen for me, unless you believe, you know, Adam Ottavino is going to be a reliable guy in the playoffs.
Will he right the ship? We'll see. I mean, I agree with you. I'm a little bit less so on the Pat Neshek move for them. I think they would have been better served to get Brad Hand or Kinsler, even though Hand is a division rival. But the only problem I have with Neshek, I think he's a good pitcher. I think the problem is he's an extreme flyball pitcher, but the Rockies have actually been going out and getting flyball pitchers and abandoning the attempt to get ground ballers. So, you know, maybe
well,
I'm wrong.
Getting
maybe
high strikeout guys,
right? And Nisha,
like,
I mean,
I've given up on allowing people to make contact in that ballpark at all,
which makes sense. And then usually, you'll find that your high strikeout guys are the same guys who are giving up fly balls, just because these are due to throw pretty hard and throw up in the zone, but Neshek is, he's a crafty dude. I mean, he's been able to survive in the league with a funky motion for a while now, and not only survive, but succeed in the league. So I think he'll be able to, you know, go into that environment and adjust at least by the time October rolls around.
And it's worth noting that Nishek is having a really fantastic year at 36 years old. 1.29 ERA in 45 appearances, 42 full innings pitched, one save. Obviously, he was on the Phillies, so that he did not exactly have ample opportunities to make saves, but he's rocking a whip of 0.81. That's a pretty slick buy, if you ask me.
Pretty good there, huh?
Yeah, he's looking hot. And then down south, southwest, the Diamondbacks picked up J.D. Martinez, who's been on fire lately.
Yeah, that one's paying instant dividends for them, so that's got to feel pretty good if you're a Diamondbacks fan. What's interesting is I don't think we would have expected it at the time, but did the Diamondbacks get the best hitter on the market by the end of this trade deadline? I mean, I guess you can make a case for Todd Frazier, even though he was, you know, slumping pretty bad to begin the year. But it seems like this trade market was basically all about pitching. You know, you always expect relievers to go, but mainly it was just a couple frontline starters. And the bat side of it, there just wasn't necessarily the same need that you would expect.
Yeah. As far as best hitter available, I think it really comes down to who gets the most value in run production. I mean, These are basically all rentals. I mean, I don't know if is J.D. Martinez signed beyond this year?
No, I don't believe so.
Right. So then you have three rentals in Frazier, Martinez, and Nunez, who are the three biggest hitters to get moved. Mm-hmm. As far as who is the best hitter available, it's really just what guy on a playoff team is capable of making the biggest impact. J.D. Martinez is going to be the obvious choice because he's the biggest bat and the hottest bat on the best team of the three. So I think that arguing for J.D. Martinez is a strong argument, but I could see Eduardo Nunez being an incredibly valuable guy with his defensive versatility. He's going to get a lot of innings, and he's going to make a big impact. And with his speed, I think he's going to get a lot of cheap hits. And who knows, with Todd Frazier in Yankee Stadium, he could see a significant home run pop, especially batting around Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge.
And into that jet stream, too.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going to have, like, Jason Bay-esque nightmares when he comes to Fenway for the first time.
No, I agree. I guess I'm actually, you know, it's rare we haven't been able to say this in a while, but with the new command down in Arizona, I really like the J.D. Martinez trade now that I have time to think about it. Most likely the Diamondbacks are going to be in the wild card, which means that, you know, if they were to advance past that one game, they're going to be facing the Dodgers, who right now three of their top four pitchers are all left-handed hitters, and the Diamondbacks are struggling against lefties. So it made sense to kind of come out and get lefty killer J.D. Martinez to shore up that lineup and give them a right-handed bat to kind of protect themselves. But I'm surprised the NL West has done a pretty good job of being able to kind of establish yourself as a really strong division, and all three teams made really strong moves to be able to help themselves. I mean, obviously the Dodgers being the strongest team to begin with, but I think the Rockies and Diamondbacks have done a pretty good job to separate themselves from the rest of the National League in terms of grabbing those one and two wild card slots.
Yep, and just a few hundred, might even be close to 1,000. How far do you think it is from Houston to Phoenix? It's a hike.
I'd probably say 700. Anyway, like 800 miles.
Well, 800 miles east-ish in Houston. The Astros did exactly what we thought they were going to do. They picked up a starter in Francisco Liriano. They didn't move any of their hot young pieces. I thought that was a decent trade. They just put Lance McCullers on the DL, 10-day DL. They obviously needed a starter because guys have been hurt all year. Colin McHugh has been inconsistent at best. So they needed a fifth or sixth guy in that rotation. and they picked up Francisco Liriano from the Blue Jays for Nori Aoki.
Right. I mean, that's a pretty good price to pay for a proven, pretty good starter to add to your rotation. I did think it was very interesting that the Astros didn't, you know, they were linked to a lot of names, they were linked to a lot of relievers, but didn't pull the trigger. They decided to kind of hold on to their pieces moving forward in the future. You know, remember we said with the Cubs, they have a lot of young talent that's going to be locked up for the next few years. It made sense for them to kind of cash in on the talent that they had down the farm system, whereas the Astros kind of took the opposite approach and were a little bit more like the Dodgers, seemed to be coming up to the deadline where they wanted to hold on to all their talent, and if they had to win from within, that's what they were going to do. I think one thing that's interesting I want to ask you a question of. I want to pause there. Sorry, I have this stupid alarm box here that goes off every 15 minutes.
No worries.
Got it. All right. I do have a question for you, though. I think there's something pretty interesting, pretty interesting thought I heard. The Dodgers, and somebody was talking about this, the small market mindset that the Dodgers seem to have in their front office, kind of focusing on trying to be good for the future, so not mortgaging their future to just try and win this year. Like, they would rather take the chance of winning the division 10 times and hoping that, you know, one of those, two of those, hopefully three of those years lead to a World Series title, rather than cashing all their chips now to win and placing their bets on the crapshoot that is the playoffs. Some people kind of agree with that. I know I find myself to think that that's probably the best way to approach it, whereas others think that, you know, A, from a fan standpoint, from a morale standpoint, maybe from a business standpoint, it's better to, you know, basically cash your chips and try and make the move to go win the playoffs and put out the best team that's out there. I mean, it seems like the Astros have taken the second approach and want to be good for a long time now, but what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's a good approach? Do you think it's better to try and have sustained success, even though we know we saw the Braves in the 90s, you know, win the division over and over and over again that led to just one World Series title?
I don't think it's a good move. I think this is the new standard of building a baseball team. I think the idea of going out and signing free agents to build your team, conceptually, that's kind of dead for teams until the point when you know your prospects aren't going to work out as well as the guy you can bring in. Especially since with baseball not having a salary cap, teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox can price out some of the smaller market and even mid-market teams, and they really jack up the market value on the really high-end pieces. So I think you're seeing a lot of teams try to imitate what the Cubs did. And we really shouldn't even be saying imitating what the Cubs did, because if you go back through the last, you know, 6-7 years of World Series winners,
right?
It's filled with teams that built internally and built competitors and were able to make it all the way to the top. Even when you look at you know, going all the way back to the Rays, they didn't win, but in 08, the Rays made it to the World Series. The Royals had their run of two World Series built on internal pieces.
Yep, good example.
I think the only team that has won a World Series of late that was built primarily on non-homegrown talent was the Red Sox in that fluke 2013 year when they had that magical run all year after the Patriots Day bombing. But I think that was mostly a mix of good vibes turning into offensive production when you had guys like, you know, Johnny Gomes had a career year. So I think what you see the Astros doing, what you saw the Dodgers doing in terms of we're not ready to acquire someone or give up prospects that could be good for somebody short term, or we're not willing to pay the high price right now when we could pay guys cheaply for 5-6 years. I think that's kind of the new business of baseball.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think especially when you look at, you know, your big fish in the ponds of the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Yankees and the approach that they kind of shifted from them. I mean, those are the guys who would go out and make the purchases and go sign the big free agents or overpay for people because they could afford it. And you're seeing them shy away from the approach, too. And I think that's, you know, helping to set the tone for all the other teams and how they address their hopes of trying to get to the playoffs or trying to succeed at least in the near future and how they go about building a team.
Yeah, and I think beyond that, I think teams are starting to understand how risky throwing a lot of money at a big-name free agent is. I mean, the Red Sox, they've had problems at third base for the last 3 years because of the Pablo Sandoval fiasco. And I know the Red Sox are a major market team and they have a huge payroll, but the Sandoval money is going to hurt their cap flexibility, not just the past 3 years, but for the next few years to come. So I think a lot of teams see mistakes like that and react by saying, you know, I think it's much safer to focus on scouting and development than it is to, say, go out and try to buy a guy.
Yeah, I know you mentioned a Jason Bay nightmare earlier, and I think this is a pretty good situation to bring that up again. Well, there's plenty of other trades that were made at the deadline, too, involving smaller parts. I know one that surprised basically no one was the Nationals acquiring Brandon Kinsler, from the Minnesota Twins, who were in kind of a rebuilding year and then saw they had a chance. And then saw that chance basically close over a week span and now decided to sell off pieces like Jaime Garcia and Kinsler. So what do you think about the move?
The Nats need warm bodies in the bullpen. Any good reliever coming to the Nationals is a good move for almost any price. And for this move, they didn't give up that much. What was the Kinsler pay? Tyler Watson. Yeah, Tyler Watson is an organizational reliever. I think it's a great move for the Nats. What's Kinsler's contract? Is he signed beyond this year? I don't think so.
I could check real quick. I think he is a rental as well.
Yeah, I think the Nationals made a good move. They now have three solid relievers. Right, Brandon Kinsler is a free agent at the end of this year. He was an all-star this year. He's still rocking some pretty good numbers. The Nationals now have taken what was a historically bad bullpen, and they've turned it into what should be at worst a solid bullpen. They'll be reliable. I don't think they'll be world beaters like the Royals were a few years ago, like the Indians were last year, like the Cubs were at times last year. But I do think that with the Nationals' offensive production and with their starting pitching, assuming Steven Strasburg comes back healthy, that leaves them in a pretty good shape going into the bullpen, going into the playoffs. Excuse me.
Yep. The big thing for the Nationals was just finding somebody to get out. And now they have three guys who are coming in from the outside, kind of don't have that stench of Nats bullpen on them. And we've seen Mattson and Doolittle throw for the Nats already. And they've had, you know, pretty good success, at least success that would hold up in a playoff. They've been able to come out here. And I know today Gio Gonzalez actually trying to prove he's a reliable starter for the playoffs, took a no-hitter into the ninth and, you know, gave up a base hit. But Sean Doolittle was able to come in and close the door in a 1-0 ball game. So I think the Nationals are starting to, you know, exhale a little bit and, you know, bringing in another quality arm like Brandon Kinsler, who was an all-star this year for the Twins, you know, take that for what it's worth, but having himself a good year. I think if you're Washington, you're pretty happy about the fact that you can at least relax when it comes to the end of the games.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the NL East, another reliever trade was made. The Mets picked up A.J. Ramos. Josh, why?
My first thought was maybe like they were playing keep away. You know what? I know the Nationals are going for a reliever. I'm going to get them so that they can't get them. But It's a pretty interesting move. I mean, this is the same team that gave up Addison Russell, who was their eighth inning guy, to effectively acquire Ramos. Say it again?
Addison Reed. Addison Russell is the shortstop for the Cubs.
Whoops.
Hashtag we know baseball.
Yeah, I know. I got you. Let me see. Where should I start?
Just start right now. I'm leaving this part in.
I got you. Yeah, Russell on the mound, probably not as effective. I think giving up Addison Reed kind of signaled that, hey, look, we're looking to sell. But at the same time, Reed was also a rental. I mean, he only had this year remain on his contract before he hit free agency. A.J. Ramos still has an arb year and some control left heading into next year. So as silly as it sounds, it wasn't that bad of a move for the Mets, because I think they still look at themselves and look at that lineup and say, hey, look, if we didn't have all the injuries we did at the beginning of the year, we could be in contention. And you know what? In 2018, we could be in contention again. So why not go ahead and make the move now, go and get Ramos to shore up the bullpen and, you know, be able to control him cheaper than it would be to re-sign Addison Reed in the offseason to make a run at in 2018.
One thing that did occur to me, in the last few minutes while we were talking about this, I'm going to set this up differently. The Marlins are bad. Their stadium is being paid off by the public, so they don't owe a lot of assets. They're about to be sold, to new ownership. Could this be the start of perhaps a larger Marlins sell-off, or do you think this was just an opportunity for them to grab a couple prospects? Because their prospect situation is not good. They don't have any top 100 prospects.
No. I think, you know, for 29 of the 30 teams, if they were in this position, you could reasonably make that argument and say, hey, look, they're making a smart, prudent move. I think for this one organization, you can look around there and basically say they have no idea what they're doing. And so I think they made this move independent of future plans of whether they want to sell off or not. I don't think they really kind of understand what direction they're trying to go with this team, because they have a pretty good lineup. I mean, this is a lineup that's running out Stanton, who's, you know, hot or cold. Right now he's hot. You have D. Gordon at the top. You have Marcelo Zuna and Christian Yelich. I mean, JT Realmuto looks pretty good behind the plate. Like, you have a pretty good lineup there, and you actually had a pretty good bullpen. You just needed to get some better starters than Dan Straley, who I know, he's having a good year. But you just didn't have any top-of-the-line starters for them ever since the passing of Jose Fernandez. So I think they're kind of in a flux on what they want to do, but I think there are some outside pressures that might cause them to basically fall back into Marlins mode, which is, oh, everything they hear that's expensive, sell it away. Get rid of it. Cost too much.
Yeah, I don't want to get too distracted from what our main discussion is, which is reviewing the trade deadline. But if you ask me, if you look at their lineup, a lot of their best players are under team control. When you look at Justin Bour, Yelich, Ozuna, Realmuto, mm-hmm. D. Gordon is not being paid a whole lot of money. If you did want to try to do a rapid rebuild, I could see them moving Stanton in the offseason. It would be a really bold move, and you'd have to have ownership behind it, and they don't have ownership right now.
Exactly.
But if the sale goes through quickly and they decide that there is somebody to move, that's a prediction I'd be willing to bet on a little bit.
Well, I'll jot that down because I'm interested to see. I mean, I think you make good points there. It's just kind of one of those, you know, Stanton needs to keep up this hot hitting because, you know, as well paid as he is, I mean, he puts up numbers, but he's just so streaky that might turn some people off. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. But back to the main discussion, speaking of closers being traded, or at least relievers being traded, the Indians added to their already filthy bullpen. They picked up Joe Smith from the Blue Jays. He's having a pretty nice little year. And the Royals picked up Melky Cabrera from the White Sox for A.J. Puckett, who was a second-round pick last year. They desperately needed hitting. That division seems kind of wide open right now with the Royals streaking and the Indians just not up to form that they were in last year.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because at the same time, the division's getting a little clear as the Tigers have clearly entered sell mode, and the Twins, and so have the White Sox, obviously, and then the Twins have kind of faded away. So now you just have the Indians and the Royals kind of battling it out there. And both teams have made pretty good moves to increase their chances. I get it from the Royal standpoint. I mean, they basically are in a win-now mode because their window is basically done after this year. So they're going to have a lot of people walk away. So it makes sense to go out there and get the help that they need, and they definitely got it in Melky Cabrera, who is silently having a pretty good year for himself with the White Sox.
Yeah, he's a pretty solid player who was – kind of saw his value destroyed when he got that PED suspension a few years ago.
Right.
But he's never, at least not in my recent memory, had a bad year. And I think when you add him into that Royals lineup, especially their outfield has been absolutely atrocious offensively.
Sadly, yeah.
And it's not that surprising when you look at Alex Gordon and Lorenzo Cain. Not exactly heavy bats out there.
Nope. Nope, that was definitely a move that was needed, and yet they were still able to execute it without overpaying, which is a pretty common theme for this trade deadline. I mean, we've only seen a few trades where it seems like one team made it out of desperation or one team just wasn't able to properly value what they were trying to acquire, but most of these trades seem pretty prudent. I don't think you saw as many big splash trades, especially on deadline day. I think the biggest one we've basically seen so far is Quintana to the Cubs. But like little moves like adding Joe Smith to your bullpen if you're the Indians or adding Cabrera are the type of things that help to really catapult you and maybe not be, you know, they may not show up the most in terms of the regular season, but there are definitely ways to kind of line yourself up to succeed in the small sample crapshoot that is the playoffs in October.
Yeah, and as of today, the Royals are two games out. They lost today, but in their last 10, they're 8-2. Indians are 8-2 in their last 10. How do you see that division shaking out heading toward the playoffs?
My initial gut reaction is to go with the Indians. I think when you just look at the lineup woes of the Royals, and you see how the Indians kind of struggled at the beginning of the year and have kind of started to play more like we expected them to for the end of June and the month of July, I think you can expect them to kind of start to pull away and take control of the division. I mean, unless the Royals have any more Esky magic, even though I don't think he's there anymore. It just kind of seems like they're going for it simply because that is their only option that they have, but I don't think they necessarily have the guns to shoot them up to the top.
Yeah, I agree, and especially with the Indians, they still have the lineup they had last year that brought them to the World Series. They still got the killer bullpen. Their rotation is anchored by Corey Kluber. I think you're going to see them get hot and really pull away in September and October, September.
Yep. Plus, they have some people returning from the DL, like a Danny Salazar. So, I mean, they got reinforcements that are coming back. I mean, if the Indians are playing at full strength, I'm taking the Indians over the Royals lineup any day.
Yep. And before we go away, Josh, trade deadline's passed. We're officially In the home stretch of the season. It's time for us to get serious about the playoffs. What are some things you're looking forward to in August and September?
I guess the big thing for me is I'm interested to see how the AL shakes out. Now that teams were basically forced by the trade deadline to either accept a buyer or seller identity, you're going to see teams hopefully see if the moves they made pay off for them into the home stretch here. I think another interesting thing to see is some of the prospects, some of the recruits that are going to be brought up. I think the Mets announced that they're bringing up Ahmed Rosario, who I believe was the top MLB's top number one prospect.
No, he's still rated behind Moncada, even though Moncada can't hit his weight in but even he's still, the number three prospect, and I'm pretty sure he's the number one shortstop.
Ah, gotcha. Even still, I think it's nice to see these guys come up and be able to kind of provide an instant spark to a team, to be able to see some of the races that are going to shake out. I mean, we talked about the Indians and the Royals out in the Central. I think you can look over in the NL Central and you can see that the Pirates actually made a hard charge, but I think it's still going to come down between the Cubs and the Brewers, with the Cubs winning that. And I think, of course, one of the most interesting races will be the NL wild card, because it'll be right now between the Diamondbacks and the Rockies to see who gets sacrificed to the Dodgers on their march to the World Series.
Yeah, and I don't see anybody who's even close to them.
Nope.
Like the West Coast playoff picture is pretty clearly defined. The West Coast. The NL playoff picture is pretty clearly defined right now, isn't it? Because the Nationals are 14 games up. The Dodgers are 14 games up on the Diamondbacks, who have 60 wins. The Rockies have 60 wins.
Absurd.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the only thing left to really decide is, are the Brewers going to be able to hang with the Cubs? My guess is no. The Brewers have been outperforming every reasonable metric by which you could judge them for the entire year. And the Cubs, we've talked about before, they had a incredible regression, like a really unpredictable post-World Series regression.
In all facets of the game.
Every facet of the game.
Yeah, everything.
Kyle Schwarber just totally forgot what a baseball looked like.
Well, that and then your entire pitching staff. I mean, basically all five of your starters all just said, you know what? Success, not that fun. Let's struggle. Let's make this year interesting.
Anyway, well, my friend, I'm looking forward to the end of the season. Well, not looking forward to the end of the season. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. I'll talk to you next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see how this stuff turns out.
All right. Until next time.